Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Castoris Podcast with a K. Let's introduce my colleagues, Brian Terranova and James McLean.
Hello there. You got a very odd noise for your name there, Brian.
I did.
You do?
I do, yes.
I think that must have been the listener.
It might have been. Do you get that when you go out?
Is
that...
Actually, no. See, what it is I've legally changed my name. So it is now Brian Terranova.
This reminds me of a Fry and Laurie sketch.
Right?
Yeah. We've talked about this one before, haven't we?
Yeah, I think we must have done. It's one of my favourites, yes. Yeah. No, it's not Mr. Nipple.
No, yes.
It's N-I-P-P-L hyphen E.
Apostrophe. Is it hyphen?
No, it's hyphen E.
It's hyphen E,
yeah. It's definitely hyphen E, yeah. Yes.
But wasn't his last name?
Yes. Well,
yeah. That's how he pronounces it, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, one of the greatest episodes of anything ever, that one. So it's the Castoris Podcast with a K, dear listener. You're here. We're going to talk about Doctor Who. Forget about Hugh Laurie and Stephen Fry. We are going to talk about Doctor Who, and we're going to crack on with it pretty much now, actually, because we've got a lot to get through, or potentially a lot. It depends how the conversation goes in a couple of areas. So I was watching TV on Saturday night. I thought it'd be a great idea to tune in for the BBC's new show, Atlantis, which seemed like it was going to be absolutely brilliant based on the trailers, which I hadn't seen. And so there it was, sat there. And all of a sudden, a hashtag, and Matt Smith's voice telling me to save the day, save the Doctor. And then nothing, apart from an hour of hokey dialogue and overtrodden, dramatic cues and things that no one has ever seen before in anything ever.
But that is where the smartness was, you see, because what it was, Doctor Who is about time travel,
yeah.
And it time traveled us back to 1995 when Hercules' Legendary Journeys was popular and refreshing and new, and this was trying to be a substandard version of that popular show in that year.
Is that what it was?
I think so. I think they thought they went and pitched it. We want to be we don't want to be like Hercules, certainly not like Xena. We want to be a worse version of that, but we want to make sure it feels like it's done in the same year. So everyone watching it feels like they're back in 1995 and they're watching a show which isn't quite as good as the other show, which is popular at the time.
Well, actually, I think you've been unfair. Now, I've read a lot about this. There's been a lot of reaction and... I mean, you know, I put on Facebook on my personal page that I felt that my whelm was completely undid by certainly the first hashtag and Atlantis. I will say that someone said that Atlantis, and whoever you were very, very funny, but I can't remember who you were or where I read it, but someone said that they felt that Atlantis made the Time Monster look like Blink. Which obviously made me chuckle quite a bit. But let's not be completely unfair, because the second half of the hashtag sting had basically what was missing from the first half, i.e. something that actually made you want to watch Doctor Who, namely the theme tune. William Hartnell era theme tune. It's like they split it in half. And...
Please, if I wanted that, I could go and write Save the Day on a piece of paper, press play on a video... And watch, I could even see a whole episode of William Hartnell. I wouldn't just have a little bit of his music. Seriously, anyone could do that. A child could have put that out and probably did.
Let's not draw any assumptions about the PR team behind hash Save the Day. But it does feel as though it has been used to offer some sort of crutch to Atlantis by dragging in Doctor Who fans.
Because this is something which has been going on in the comments thread on the Casterbris on this article,
yeah.
And I've been reading it along as I know you have as well, Christian, replying. People seem to have misunderstood why people are irritated by this, and it's not because people were massively excited expecting a full trailer. It's because it feels like Doctor Who is being used rather crassly to try and pump up audience ratings over a show which the BBC, from what I understand, was deeply worried about for the amount of money that's gone into it,
yeah.
And the fear that it went through production very quickly, as far as I understand. And that is where I think people are a bit miffed, is that, I mean, there was no real reason to put on the BBC Doctor Who thing that there's going to be the stings. I kind of feel this is where I disagree with people in the comments. I think they knew very well that a lot of Doctor Who fans, a lot of casual people, wouldn't know what stings are,
yeah.
or would even go in hoping that it was actually going to be a little more. You know, they just have the optimism that might be a sting, but as you said in the comments thread, maybe we'll get a Dalek eye stalk or something.
Mm-hmm.
And they played on that a little. So you say, should we be nasty to the PR team? I could honestly say you could say no, because it was a very smart bit of PR venture for Atlantis and possibly for Doctor Who, in the sense that people are now hashtagging, if not with a slight pissiness, save the day. It's going out there. Everyone's doing it. So PR team have done a very good job, but I don't know whether they've done it as a sort of, was it morally right to use it in that way? Is moral? Can you use moral in entertainment? Is it? Is anything moral? I don't know.
I think maybe once upon a time, but I think we've long since passed that, thanks to Madonna. So.
Well, I would say I've got no interest in seeing the trailer. It'd be nice to see it. I think they should show it, since, as we've said before, they've shown it on the San Diego Comic Con.
Well, this is the other side of it. People are saying, oh, you don't show trailers for shows 2 months before, don't you? Well, Doctor Who does it regularly on a biannual basis. It shows trailers for the Christmas episode at the end of the summer episode, assuming the Christmas episode has been filmed.
Yeah.
And it shows trailers for the next series at the end of the Christmas episode. And they're usually like 3 to 6 months apart, depending on which one you're talking about.
And also, it must be worth pointing out, it's not like we're saying, damn it, BBC, why don't you waste money and actually make us a trailer?
Mm. They've got at least two ready-made. Well, at least one ready-made. And we know that they're making another one. I'm not sure whether the Edinburgh one is the same as the Comic-Con one or not. I heard it was different, but you can never tell.
I can't imagine it'd be that different, but...
No. For well, the
other question
show.
Too is though, is save the date even necessary?
Well, that's the other thing, Brian.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not even, it's a recycled hashtag from something to do with some American pop star whose name escapes me at the moment.
Okay.
So it's not even Doctor Who's hashtag, which is doubly frustrating for me, at least.
Had they gone with something like 50th related, like something this way, any kind of tweet that you could find with that hashtag would be specifically related to the 50th. Just tweet your memories, tweet your thoughts, tweet your excitement, your expectations, whatever.
Yeah.
Get more buzz flowing. I can kind of understand that. But save the day, like what Doctor Who fan out there right now doesn't realize that that's the big day? Even if for some reason someone doesn't seem to think that the new episode is going to be aired on that day, they all know big stuff is happening on that day because it's the anniversary day. You know, save the day just seems pointless to me. It's not like somebody's getting married and we need to remember that one day that we didn't even know existed. You know, this is 50 years worth of this day. I think it's kind of pointless. I definitely agree with those who think it was to drum up the attention for the Atlantis.
Well, look, I've just sent you both a hashtag. What do you think of it? Because if you like it, then I'm possibly in the wrong job.
It honestly makes more sense.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I agree. I mean, obviously the whole point they would say is that they're obviously trying to go for the subtext, the question that people might start, ooh, what's that hashtag? But I don't even think it's actually that. I think it is, as Brian said, I think simply they were looking at a last minute way to sort of try and boost the audience figures for another show, which, yeah, as I say, you know,
which isn't even on in the same time slot as Doctor Who.
But it was very important for them because it's taking the Merlin.
Oh, well, so, you say that, but I mean, and I know it is, but again, Merlin would be on earlier in the evening as well. This was aired at 8:25. Doctor Who, repeatedly since 2010, has been on between sort of like 6:20 and 7:20. Merlin was on usually sort of like 10 to 7, 7 o'clock. This show was on at 8:25.
No, I don't. I agree. What I'm saying is I know that the reason that I believe one of the reasons it was pushed forward fast was because they wanted something to cover the Merlin gap.
Yeah.
Not, and
also, they've rushed during the post-production, have they?
From what I understand, the development of this has been very, very fast.
Right.
But, I mean, to be fair to the PR people, and I think what you said earlier is actually a fair point, you know, because it's very easy, especially when we sit back in our anonymous little, well, we're not that anonymous, but in our chairs, it's very easy to sort of rag on people. But if I was a PR department, if I was doing PR for the BBC, and there were concerns, legitimate or not, over, or even just a desire to really push forward Atlantis, I'd probably do the same thing. It's a very smart move. You take something which is coming in the year, which has got a lot of interest around it and has got a very strong buzz following. You hashtag it and bookend it around the show that you want to prop up or to push up. I mean, so from a PR point of view, it's deft, it's smart. And it doesn't do Doctor Who any harm in the sense that while we're all grumbling about it, we're still all talking about it. And as anyone knows in advertisement, by and large, you know, any publicity is to some extent good publicity. They've done a sound job, but it does feel, I think it's irritating when you feel a little manipulated by it when it, I don't know, maybe because it's the BBC, maybe we'd sort of be okay with it if it was ITV or an independent company. Maybe we just kind of hope that there'd be a little more.
I'm kind of outside that whole perspective. Yeah. So to be perfectly honest, I think it was just a poor thing to do. I mean, it was just trumping up their episode, trying to drum up attention for their new TV show. It has nothing to do with Doctor Who. I mean, yes, obviously they want it to have something to do with Doctor Who, and they're having hopes for it to do something for Doctor Who. But the point, what's the point? Save the day. We already are.
Okay,
you know, and we're already tweeting a million things about it on Twitter. You know, like, you just gave us a hashtag that told us to save the day that we already are, and you made us learn about that hashtag by watching a TV show that we otherwise probably wouldn't have watched, maybe might have watched in the first place.
A question for you two. If there had been a small, and we'll keep it to the assumption of a sting, a small teaser factor to it, would that have made it legitimate, even though it was aiming to do the same thing for Atlantis? Would you have been okay with it if we'd seen, as Christian said, a Dalek eye stalk?
I don't even need the Dalek eye stalk. The second sting was fine. Why didn't they just use the second sting at the beginning? Then, you know, it's done. We don't have to watch the end of Atlantis just on the off chance that it might be, and as it was, it turned out it was, a different sting or a longer sting. It was that. That's what I'm angry about. Well, you know,
you've answered your own question there, haven't you? Why would I have?
I know. But I mean, you know, I mean, the hashtag as well is meaningless, really. Hash Day of the Doctor, which I just sent to my two colleagues earlier, dear listener. That what's wrong with that? That's
that
what the episode's called, for Rassilon's sake.
And having a sting that either had an eye stalk or an actor, a character, whatever from the show. Yeah, while it would have been nice, it still seems that, you know, they were cleverly, not cleverly, they were definitely trying to drum up attention for the show. Getting to whatever these points were, like when I found out that Save the Day was what it was, and I did watch the second sting, and I have to say I'm as underwhelmed by that one as you were by the first one, you know, just because it has the music on it, it still has a pointless thing that I'm not going to use. You know, I know Doctor Who is coming. I'm excited for Doctor Who to be coming. I was excited to see something interesting from the show, and instead we get nothing.
I remember someone said on either Facebook or on Castabas, that it's trending. Of course it's trending. Everyone's annoyed by it.
Well, this is a question, isn't it, these days? And I'm not sure what the answer is. Is trending always a good thing if it's negative trending? Or is that in itself a good thing? I don't know. I don't know, you know, on the broader scheme. What about if they'd done it as something which was more amusing? I mean, if they'd done sort of Save the Day for the Doctor, and then you have, as you pointed out before we aired, you know, you have that amusing little hashtag of STD for the Doctor, or, you know, if there'd been a sort of slight hint of amusement, or I don't know. I think sometimes there's this sort of battle between consumers and producers where you both know you want the same thing. The producers want something to do well. The consumer wants to eat something that is done well. Yeah. So you have this battle of doing each other favors. And it's something like this, I think, just jars a little, because you kind of feel like my desire for a certain food has been manipulated a little to get me to eat another piece of food. And I feel that, you know, our friendship has gone awry. And I think that's probably what bugs people. It's not the question of whether we should have a trailer now or not. Even though, as I say, I think you're right, Christian. You know, by now people would expect a trailer, and there is a trailer. So people are still slightly annoyed about that. But this just seems to add insult to injury that even as a sting, we get nothing except an episode of Atlantis. Actually, I thought, did you watch after the sting? There was a nice little Brian won't know this, but there was a nice little bit with a promo for Have I Got News For You?
Yeah.
Where Have I Got News
For You?
Have you?
Yeah.
Capitalized on the Doctor Who thing with Hislop and Paul Merton, the two show hosts, doing a little scarf TARDIS thing, which was actually far better than the Sting. If they'd put book into that either side, I think I'd have preferred it.
No. You know, also...
You can watch that later, Brian.
Yeah, I've seen the pictures of it, because I remember when they were floating around and everybody thought it was Tom Baker filming something.
Yeah, and so much McCoy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. what I was going to say was, though, playing devil's advocate for a little bit, as much as I would love to see a 50th trailer, do you think that in some way the BBC might actually be being wise by not giving us a trailer, in the respect that the
episode's not very good?
No. In the way that Hollywood movies... anymore, they give you a teaser trailer and then they give you another trailer, then they give you a longer trailer, and by the time you actually get to see the movie in the theaters, you think you've seen all the best bits because they've already put everything in the trailer. Do you think there's any kind of concern that if they put out this trailer now and then they have to do, you know, some more let's pump people up again in October or even like a little bit in November, that they might have to rework trailers a little bit more, that they might be giving away too much? Because the episode is what we have, we have an extra half an hour than we normally did. So, the little trailers that they're going to do anyway, or that they used to do per episode, they could get away with, you know.
Well, I'm wondering about this myself, because the BBC website said that they are filming, or they've done a trailer and it's in post-production, they've done a specially recorded trailer for the episode. Now, I'm wondering whether this is something to do with the fact that perhaps there's still 3D processing work going on for the cinematic release. Or something along those lines.
Are they still doing that?
Yeah, apparently. They're broadcasting it on BBC on BBC 3D anyway. So there is still going to be a 3D. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering whether they're putting all the resources into the 3D stuff. And that's why we're not getting a trailer. And that's why we're getting a special trailer that's been recorded after the episode's been filmed. Why we're not getting the trailer that's been produced for those other things is maybe something to do with BBC Worldwide and not BBC Wales. Who knows?
Or it could be that it's... Well, we'll know if the episode's not very good, if they, when the episode comes on, if they bookend it with Stings for the next series of Atlantis.
Indeed, yes.
And those Atlantis...
Save the TV show.
And those Atlantis forums will be going buzzing with fury. And this terrible manipulation of their beloved show. Yes. The single watcher. We'd be able to get the single watcher of Atlantis with our single listener, and they could have a chat, exchange stings.
I like that you didn't make our listener be the single watcher. It shows that they have taste.
Well, I kind of thought. I mean, to be fair, I have to say I did actually watch some of Atlantis. It's not me just sort of spouting what you could probably read on Twitter. I've not checked Twitter, but I'm sure there was a lot of bad mouthing of it. I was quite disappointed by what I saw.
By the first 30 seconds.
Yeah, so it's not just sort of bad mouthing for the sake of bad mouthing or for any sort of ill will, because I don't bear it any will, ill will whatsoever. I just think that I was quite surprised by what I saw. Oh dear.
Yes. Yes.
Oh dear, oh dear.
Okay,
oh dear.
Well, let us move on to Stephen Moffat's interesting discussion with Nerd Cubed last week, which appeared. We ran it on Costobus on the weekend in a nice little video clip. Do you like those new video windows on Costobus, by the way, guys? I think they're quite cool.
I like a lot of the new look.
Yeah, cool.
I was playing with it again earlier. I think a lot of it really works well.
Yeah, I'm very happy with it.
Yeah.
So basically, yeah, Stephen Moffat was saying that the fact that the 12th Doctor, Peter Capaldi, has appeared in Doctor Who previously, obviously in The Fires of Pompeii in 2008, and in Torchwood Children of Earth as a kind of career politician trying to get a handle of the situation of the 456, is going to be somehow written into Doctor Who following the regeneration. And I'm curious as to, I mean, I'd love to know what you think of it, dear listener, so perhaps you could let us know in the comments under this podcast, whether you are listening on Audio Boo or on the main website. You can leave comments. If you're listening on stitcher.com, then please email us or head over to the website and leave your comment or tweet us at CastDerbysDW. What do you guys think of this, though? Do you think, is it something that should be done? Or should they just kind of ignore it in a Colin Baker sort of way?
Well, you know, much like any other idea that we hear about potentially coming up in particular episodes, you know, we always have our instinct opinion or our base opinion. And then, you know, I am willing to give it a chance and see if I'm wrong or see if it's interesting. But to be honest, if they were for some reason going to use Peter Capaldi again in the show as a different character rather than him actually being the Doctor, say that never happened, I can see them doing it in a kind of Eve kind of way. Eve Miles. I'm sorry, Miles kind of way. Because you know, it's interesting, that kind of like family line thing. I can get behind that. If they're going to do it in any way that harkens back to the Martha Jones situation, then that's, you know, that's rather poor. They had a brilliant way to use that if they were going to use it, and they opted not to. But since it's going to be the Doctor, and Moffat is talking about that Russell had this brilliant idea that explains the two faces, and who knows, maybe it's a brilliant idea. Why does it relate to the Doctor? I don't think we need it. Like, in the Colin Baker sort of way, I think we should just go ahead and have this man come on as a Doctor. You know, these are actors. They're going to act in TV shows. They might play multiple roles. It's not the first time. You know, I mean, we've had other situations where they ignored it. You know, they ignored Amy. They ignored Colin. You know, they mentioned Martha and they mentioned Gwen. You know, and that's fine. One of them worked. One of them didn't. You know, I personally, do I think we need it? No, I don't think we need it. If it works out well, will I accept it? Well, obviously, I have no choice. But if it works out poorly, you know we're going to be talking about it.
We never got a moment in the sort of unity of Doctor Who where Sergeant Benson and Captain Yates were chatting to each other. I was watching the Saint the other night. There was a bloke on there, looked just like the Master.
Mm.
Never happened. I know it's a different show that we'll be talking about if it would have happened. But, you know, so he's
Just on the line
chain about actors.
Harry Sullivan. Yeah. You know, he was in the Third Doctor's era as a completely different character, and then he's back in the show, but they don't address that.
No.
You know, it's just, they're
no
gigs. They work.
There's no need to.
No, not at all.
And, I mean, how many years is it going to, it's going to be 6 years since Fires of Pompeii.
Right.
When we see, see the Doctor in action. Yeah, because that was 2008, wasn't it? And it was recorded in 2007. And we're going to be seeing Peter Capaldi as the Doctor, presumably on Christmas Day for a short while, and then, you know, September next year, this time next year. So it's going to be a long time between appearances. What do you think, James?
I would say devil's advocate. I'll play devil's advocate here, that we're in a situation where we now have DVDs and videos, and maybe there is the argument that while in the past people may have not even noticed Ian Marta in Carnival of Monsters, to notice him again as the same actor in, you know, a year or so later, couple of years later, that's a fair point. I suppose you could argue, I think the best argument for it either way is simply, does it make for an interesting storyline? You shouldn't do it because you feel obliged to, but if you've got a nice little angle which might make for an interesting, dramatic or fun storyline that people might want to watch. Because let's be frank, if we're all very honest, I would say 88% of Doctor Who fans out there, no, let's say 69%, because 69 is funnier. Okay. 69% of Doctor Who fans out there would love to have had a story or a comment where the issue of Maxwell and the Sixth Doctor is noted. The people like that. They find it fun. They like little things like that. I don't think there's many who would say, wouldn't want that. If Big Finish did a story where Maxwell and the Sixth Doctor got together for some unknown reason, people would lap it up because it'd be fun. It'd be interesting. So to a degree, should we just be honest with ourselves and say, yeah, we probably will like it, providing it doesn't constrict the universe too much, if that makes sense. If it seems too silly or it feels too forced, then maybe, I don't know. I mean, did the Eve Miles thing, did that really help at all? I don't know if it did.
That's the thing. It didn't help. But what worked was, for that, it was a throwaway line. It connected those two characters in, like you said, that fun way that fans do like to lap things up. They didn't dwell on it. Now, here, this guy's going to be the Doctor. How are they going to bring up this character, these two unrelated characters, and one of them's even from a different TV show? Connected, yes, but a different TV show. how are they going to connect it together? Are they going to do just a funny throwaway line? Moffat made it sound like Russell had this grand idea he was working to. Now, with Moffat, with Russell saying it was a grand idea, to him, that could be an easy throwaway line, you know?
Could it mean the return of a certain time agent then, do you think?
Captain Jock?
Yeah, that one.
I think if that was the case, I think no non-disclosure agreement in the world would have actually stopped John Barrowman from actually accidentally releasing that on morning television. So no, I don't think it is the case, but I agree.
Well, a concrete one, mate. Children of Earth style.
I don't think concrete would stop him. I don't think anything could.
I wanted to point out that it has happened a lot of times in the past, and sometimes we've had really talented actors or actors who have been encased in plaster or prosthetics or whatever, such as Michael Wisher.
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't know if you didn't know who Michael Wisher was and you didn't know what he looked like. If you'd watched Terror of the Autons, Carnival of Monsters and Genesis of the Daleks after each other, you wouldn't know it was the same guy playing one of the main villains in all three of them, would you?
Mm.
So there is that side of it, and we often get returning villains played by the same actors or playing different parts. But like Brian says, like James says, it is the Doctor, and can we just kind of, if we're gonna do it, something that's maybe throwaway and doesn't interfere with anything else, perhaps.
Which, for example, when Lala Ward became Romana, she said that she liked Princess Astra's face.
Yeah.
And therefore I chose it. You know, if they did a throwaway thing like that, whatever. I don't think it's needed whatsoever because the Doctor's never explained it before. I don't even think the Doctor's actually had control of what he looked like before.
Yeah.
But if they're going to connect it in some way that, for instance, if they were going to give him a face that they were going to link to somehow within the history of the show, they should be giving him a face that's somehow going to cause him trouble during his life in this body. Somehow things that are going to creep up and have people mistake him for this other person that he now looks like. You know, I mean, I that's the only way that I can see it being.
Well, perhaps Clara will think he looks like Malcolm Tucker.
Hmm. Mm.
And then we get into this whole thing as to which BBC shows have their own universe and which ones are in our universe and which ones are in the Doctor Who universe.
If they wanted to do that, they should make him regenerate into Adric. That would be interesting, wouldn't it? Every episode he'd be running away from hordes of fans. Falls over, regenerates into Pip and Jane Baker. Again, more episodes of him running down corridors away from angry fans.
So in Clara's universe, he's an actor on TV named Peter Capaldi, who actually has acted in a TV show called Doctor Who and Torchwood, and it makes the Doctor realize that his life is fiction, and all this time, he never got out of the mind robber.
Yeah. Oh,
that's it. That's the only link that would work. Not really, but that's the only one.
Just out of interest, do you guys
know... still the second Doctor.
I know the books and Big Finish have sort of played death to this idea, but... Do you ever like to think of the mind robber in the idea that it was all a dream? Because there is obviously that very, very subtle inference in the last episode.
Well, yeah, it's cheap, isn't it?
It is very cheap.
With that, so I tend not to take that path.
I agree with that, yeah. It's kind of like, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Bob Newhart show over here. But
is he still alive?
No. There was a show years ago, and unfortunately, I can't remember both of them. There was a Bob Newhart show and the other one, which I forget the name of it.
I have a Bob Newhart album by my feet.
Aha. But the end of the other TV show, which was a pretty funny TV show at the time, he wakes up in bed with the wife from the Bob Newhart TV show, the TV show that was prior, and the entire TV show that you had just spent years watching, and mind you, they're comedies, but the entire TV show that you had just spent watching was just a dream of the main character from his previous television show. So that's why
it kind of works, doesn't it?
For a comedy show, it's silly. And, you can kind of sit there and go, oh, that's funny. They brought us back to this other TV show that we loved so much. And it's hilarious. Because, I mean, when you look at some of the crazy things that the characters actually did in the second TV show, which unfortunately I just can't remember the name of. It works. But in TV shows like Doctor Who and so on, I mean, you could do a dream episode, but you got to like clearly make it. Like, for instance, the Dream Lord, that episode where both realities were ending up with them being a dream. I can get behind that. with the mind robber, I mean, it does seem like they just land. For instance, with the three doctors, you know, Omega landed in this reality that was created because of him, and here the Master lands in this land of fiction that gets created because of the mind. I can buy that a bit more than the Doctor and companions just having a trippy dream because the TARDIS malfunctioned somehow. So no, I personally don't want to see it as a dream. Maybe I'm a bit jaded by that, but I don't like that concept.
Has Doctor been hit by that yet? Because there is I think pretty much anyone who goes on the internet knows that there is a plethora of American television which is now all interlinked, primarily through St. Elsewhere rather than. It was St. Elsewhere, wasn't it? That did the same thing. That was a dream at the end of the autistic child within the show. Well, was an autistic, or there was a child within the hospital whose it was all a dream of. But because there's been so many crossovers into St. Elsewhere with so many other shows, the inference spread out over a plethora of shows throughout American television, which now end up being a dream of this one child, including The X-Files, Homicide, Roseanne, which itself was a made-up story of the character at the end. So you get, it spreads out really quite wide. If you actually see sort of like family tree diagrams of how much this spreads out across US television, I don't think it's touched British TV yet that I'm aware of, but maybe it has. And Doctor Who is part of that same dream. You've not heard of that?
No.
You've not?
I didn't actually watch that show.
No, well, I didn't either, but it's a very famous internet meme, is, yeah, that St. Elsewhere was a dream.
I shall look into it forthwith.
And virtually everything else, as I say,
wow,
all the way through. Because, you know, you've got the problem of Homicide, Life on the Streets. John Munch has been in, what, 5 or 6 shows? So you take down all the Law and Order. They come from St. Elsewhere's dream as well, because he's linked into them. He's linked into the X-Files. X-Files is linked into The Simpsons. Simpsons is linked into The Family Guy. It just goes all the way through.
It sounds very much like the economy of the globe, actually. All interlinked and all primed to collapse when someone pulls the rug out from under it. A little bit of satire for you there, dear listener. Let's move on to William Hartnell, who in 1967 was no longer the Doctor. Indeed, he was in Panto. In Puss in Boots, on the South Coast somewhere. And he doesn't seem to have been very happy about it, if the recent interview that has appeared on... discovered interview that has appeared on the 10th Planet DVD is anything to go by. Now, there's a few things in this interview, and you really should buy the 10th Planet to watch the whole thing, because an awful lot of it has been quoted online. And for God's sake, it's the 10th Planet. So buy it. So a lot of it has been quoted online, so I don't really want to go into it too much. However, the old boy was not very happy about a few things, it would seem, whilst being questioned by this journalist who, in fact, I think he was a cameraman, the guy who recorded it. It's kind of a dual role thing going on. Presumably, the BBC Southwest newsroom didn't have much of a budget for going out and meeting former stars of Doctor Who in Panto. So what transpires is this video of William Hartnell being quite miserable in front of a mirror while he's putting on his makeup before going on stage. And he says various things, which we may have talked about previously, such as describing himself as a legitimate actor and saying that pantomime isn't legitimate theatre, which some may sympathise with, some may not. However, he's... This is the bit where he's asked about the Daleks, and he says, "I'm not brassed off. It's the association of the Dalek question, this mechanical mobile object. I'm beginning to find it distracting. And they were difficult to play to, because you're not looking into human eyes, you're looking at a metal object moving about with a voiceover." Do you think... I mean, the whole topic of William Hartnell's retirement, or leaving Doctor Who, is kind of... uncomfortable. It is for me, anyway. I do find his treatment under the circumstances, and, you know, obviously no one knew at the time that he was ill, and he didn't know how ill he was, and his family didn't know how ill he was. So it all seems rather uncomfortable to me. How do you feel about it?
That's the one thing I was going to say about the interview was, to be honest, I was surprised to hear that he was acting after Doctor Who, because I thought he had left the show because he was ill. Not to say that people can't get better and do something and then get ill again, but that's the one thing that got me. You know, John Pertwee was always fond of saying that his favorite aliens were the Draconians because they had a face to act to. So that doesn't surprise me about people talking about the Daleks, that there's no eyes or facial features to relate to. I get that. And I get the aspect even from Christopher Eccleston's point of view that, you know, he wants to leave Doctor Who behind, it, even though he's happy to talk about it and he's happy to greet fans and so on. But he wants to leave the world of Doctor Who behind. So I get that standpoint as an actor. That was the one thing that just struck me, that he was doing something else. He was well enough to be doing something else.
James?
I wasn't aware of.
Yeah. James?
Yeah. Well, interestingly enough, I did, as I think I've said before, a couple of weeks ago, I was very lucky enough to interview the lovely Barbara Bain from Space 1999 and Mission Impossible. And I actually put to her a question which relates to this. I said to her, I found it very bizarre how so many actors will point out the difficulties of acting with monsters or visual effects as being hard because you've got nothing to relate to. And I said, surely, what's your take on this? Because surely the whole ethos of the theatre, which is the very crux and core of the majority of the hearts of actors, is very much about that. Is that you're acting against things which aren't there, and that can include people. And that can include visuals. It can include no markers. So and her reply very much was, well, you know, she thought it was a silly point, because in the end, that is what acting is about. It's not about you relying on props. It's about you being able to be genuine to the situation, not to the surroundings, which I think I've actually paraphrased it there in a way, which I think is rather good and probably better. I don't know. But I think that's very true. And I would probably say that William Hartnell's issues, not the Daleks, were hard to act against. I think for a lot of actors, and I think he was included, while he was very proud of a lot of Doctor Who, I think by the end of it, and it, people's stories of this differ depending on who you speak to or who you listen to.
Yeah.
It sounds to me as if he was a bit fed up with certain aspects of Doctor Who. And I think there was a lot of resentment to it. I certainly think there was, by the sounds of it, a fair bit of resentment to the fact that he had to leave, for whether it was his own health or other reasons, whether he had to through his, you know, whether it was mandatory in the
end. Well, the story's changed several times over the years, and the current version of it is that he didn't want to go, but then decided he would.
And he wasn't very thrilled, and understandably so, that the show wasn't going to end with him.
Yeah.
And it was going to move on to another actor. So at the time, I imagine there was a fair bit of resentment to Doctor Who through natural human ego. And I don't mean that to knock him at all, because I think I'd probably feel the same. So, the Dalek thing, I think you've got to take with a pinch of salt. I don't think it is about acting. I think he was struggling with the frustrations of having to leave a show which had carried on without him. I mean, that's quite hard, especially if you're the lead. And people got to remember that there was obviously no regenerations. This didn't really happen. You didn't switch leads like this, especially when the lead, this is the same character. You're not like switching to a new lead actor playing a new character. You're switching to a new actor playing the same character. That can be pretty hard. And it was very clear from what I've read that he was very much believed that he was Doctor Who, that Doctor Who was him in that must be a hard thing to move past, past. And of course, the fact that the Daleks were moving on. They were still in their high prime. Doctor Who was moving on and he was left behind. And yet he was the core character. No wonder he was a bit sort of pissy about Dalek questions or Doctor Who questions. I think I would be as well.
It's an interesting point you make there. It's like if one of us regenerated.
Yeah.
Or maybe not regenerated, but was replaced within the podcast.
Yeah.
And that's that person who's been left behind, well, on the podcast is carrying on with the popular elements, and they've been left behind because they're unable to make it, or they're too ill, or whatever.
And the worst thing is that the all the things that you've done for that podcast, all the things you thought of, the idea of the listener, or the ideas of the K, or maybe the way that you introduce yourself, or the way you speak, was just taken by the same guy. The next guy comes along and he just takes all that, and he basically just takes your model and runs with it successfully.
Well, I mean, it could have been worse, because the initial idea was to replace him with an exact replacement, as opposed to a regeneration.
But in a way, that could have been better.
Well, I don't, well, we wouldn't still be watching Doctor Who now if they'd done
that. No, of course we wouldn't. But in a sense, I mean, better on the ego sense, because you would be acknowledging that you are Doctor Who. But by changing to someone who's utterly not like you, you're almost saying, like, no, you're an idea of what Doctor Who could be. Here's another one. Bye.
Yeah.
And that could be even worse, because there's no acknowledgement to your role or to your time or to the way you did it. So, yeah, it's an interesting question. And I think, you know, you just got to, like with most things in life, you've got to turn the tables and to get away from the sort of the tabloid look, which, you know, the internet and the papers love to do, and just sort of try and sympathize a little. And I can kind of understand why he'd have been a bit miffed by that. Out of all the doctors, he had the hardest transition, with maybe the exception possibly of Peter Davison, just simply because Tom Baker was just so massive. That must have been a hard one to follow.
Peter Davison's quite tall as well.
Fair enough.
But moving on then.
Actually, real quick, before you sorry, it's interesting the parallels. Like, first of all, I wasn't aware that the story of William Harnow kept changing, and I don't know why, but
to it as well, which I was going to mention before, that, I mean, like, Annika Wills has repeatedly said that he was a bit of a racist.
Well, not just Annika Wills.
Yeah, well, yeah. I haven't seen anyone else. Who else has said it?
If you watch the Aztec DVDs,
okay,
a couple of the actors there.
Oh, is this on the extra on the commentary? Yeah. Right, okay. Yeah. I shall do that then. Carry on then.
I had heard that before. So I had heard stories, but like the story that I always had heard about his leaving was his health. And I mean, unless there's a DVD extra, which you know, I'm not caught up on all of those that maybe said it. But where I'm going with this is, it's interesting the parallels between the beginnings of both first doctors, of both first, or rather of both Doctor Who series. You know, while since the Ninth Doctor is the first one of the new series, and both of them, their leaving apparently seems clouded in a way. It's kind of weird how that paralleled.
Well, maybe he is the first Doctor then.
Maybe he is.
Christopher Eccleston and Peter Capaldi will be the fourth Doctor.
I mean, I think the other thing with the racism that people have got to also be kind of aware is that while I don't in any way condone racism in the same way that I don't believe in the notion that you can say, well, you know, all this thing about Jimmy Savile, that it was of the time. I don't think you can condone that because it was illegal at the time as well. So, you know, where do you go with it? But, you know, of the time, and he was an elderly man of the time. I mean, there's a, on the Reign of Terror DVD, there is the inference again that what was the director's name on that? He was foreign to England as well, and there is the inference that Hartnell was not happy about being directed by someone who couldn't speak the language very well. Who was from abroad?
When we say he was from abroad, was he a European?
Yes, I believe so. I wish I could remember his name. There's about a plethora of listener out there who would probably be shouting it at our podcast right at this moment. I'm wondering whether we should just edit.
I'm actually reading through press releases now, trying to find the right one. You carry on.
Reign of Terror, yes, and so there was inference, but at the same time, you know, there was a lot of, you know, there was still a lot of racism, especially for people who've been in the war. There was, you know, I would imagine there was still a very wariness of foreign involvement. And again, I'm not trying to overly justify
prejudice. Here's a story for you. Where I live, Teddy Boys would put people of dark skinned back on, would hang at the local railway station and put people of dark colour skin, or Chinese, African, Jamaican, whatever, and put them back on the train.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I mean. It doesn't mean that I agree with it. It doesn't mean that you actually condone it or you actually try and be sympathetic to it per se, but you've got to also be prepared to say you were in a different mindset, different values. I mean, in the end, we're only constructs of our own societies, aren't we? That's the bottom line. You can say what's good and evil, but strangely enough, good and evil for everyone seems to pertain to where they come from. And in that era, there wasn't such a pressure to be as tolerant there's an argument, perhaps even now there isn't, of different nationalities, especially within your own country. So to a certain degree, you could say that perhaps William Hartnell's potential questions of racism were reflective of the people of the time as much as anything, as him being unfortunate.
Well, he certainly wouldn't have been alone in having
exactly
that opinion, would he?
But I'd also find it interesting that the people who I sometimes, well, and I've got to be careful how I say this, the people who perhaps muddy the waters a little into actually how we see these actors who play the Doctor tend to be interestingly companions. Because you, if you listen to the commentaries, you know, there'll be a lot of people who will sort of say about John Pertwee that he wasn't the perfect person, as most people aren't.
Yeah.
And there were, he would have mood swings. He was very particular on who, how he worked, and his stories that he would regale would get more and more exciting and overblown every time he retold them. But yet you'll have Katie Manning will always be a staunch defender of him,
mm-hmm.
in the same way that Carol Ann Ford is always a staunch defender of Bill Hartnell.
Yeah.
And you have this sort of allegiance there. And again, as I say, I mean, these are very interesting people. You don't get to become Doctor Who without being an interesting, charming person to some degree or another. So it's not, again, to say that they're wrong to do that. But I always find it very interesting that when you get all these sort of slightly negative stories coming out, the ones who will not be doing it and the ones who will be trying to push the focus on the better things about them always tend to be those primary companions of those eras. And
yeah, that's an interesting point.
Which could be absolute falsehood, I don't know. I mean, but I had noticed that when listening to Katie Manning and Carol Ann Ford in particular.
Yeah, well, Liz Sladen's not particularly, what's the best way of putting it, complimentary about John Pertwee in her book.
No, and I just wonder if it, you know, it boils down to the certain relationships they had with those actors.
Or with the prior actors, in sort of like then impacting how they have their relationship with the second companion or what.
I think that is very, very true. I think that is also a factor. I think I imagine a lot of it depends on how you saw the actor. I get the impression, and again, I feel a bit bad saying this because Katie Manning is her own person and she's not James McLean. I do not know what she thinks, but I always get the impression listening to it that she had a lot of almost like an admiration for John in almost like a paternal way, that, you know, there's that sort of he could do no wrong sort of admiration that you have of an idol, perhaps not paternal, of an idol. And that might be why when she still sees him in that light, regardless of what other people's angles are.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. Okay, well, let's move on. And I think it's time for recommendations.
Absolutely. Sorry, I'm just replying to a message sent to me.
Okay, well, you carry on. Brian, have you got a recommendation for this week?
I do. And actually, despite what I said last podcast, I did watch and listen to some Doctor Who. So there you go. should we put these all in the podcast No, we'll leave that. Okay.
Yeah.
anyway,
I just wanted to say it.
I know what you wanted to say. Okay. I know it's a bit of a strange one, and maybe people don't. Maybe generally they think it's a bit silly. I know we mentioned it once during this podcast, but I did watch Carnival of Monsters.
Oh, did you?
I did.
I've seen that for years.
I honestly have a bit of a sweet spot for that one,
yeah,
because it's silly. You know, because it I don't know.
It's got some of the worst CSO in 1970s Doctor Who.
Yes.
I really do like it.
Yeah.
It's got such a cast as well.
Yeah, but no, it's fun. I thought it had at the heart of it, it did have a good story. Yeah. And they did. They just had fun with it. They had fun, interesting characters. Every time I watch it, I'm always entertained. You know, it's not like you're watching the most dramatic piece of television ever, but it's fun. So I definitely would recommend that.
What do you think of the Carnival of Monsters, James?
I've never liked it. Right. I've always found it a bit silly, a bit naff, a bit. I don't know. I mean, you know, they always say, oh, Sylvester McCoy's, he should be on. You know, more like Panto. And I tend to feel that there's some of John Pertwee's which feel more Panto than Sylvester McCoy's. And I tend to feel that Carnival of Monsters has that because it's got no real dramatic depth to it. It's very, it's very unfortunately cheaply done. It's just the way it is. No fault of its own. So no, I'm not a big fan of it.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's okay. I'm as I say, I like it. Okay, Brian, have you got any other recommendations?
The only other one was going to be I've been listening to the missing audio, or excuse me, the audio of the missing story. Audio.
All right, okay.
I've been writing it.
You've got it!
Out loud myself. That's right, it's me. Everyone just point your fingers and laugh. The Daleks Master Plan.
I actually pointed when I said you've got it. Daleks Master Plan?
Yes.
The whole thing?
I am on episode 7 right now, right around the time when things are going to start probably to go slightly downhill before they pick up again, which is when they start time traveling and having adventures that don't seem to relate to the main body of the story. But that said, 1 through 6 is very solid. That, and if you listen to Mission to the Unknown before it, which is amazing that they did that at the time, that they would air Mission to the Unknown, which was a setup for the Daleks Master Plan, but you know, set it 4 episodes of a completely different story apart.
Yeah.
So it's a really interesting idea, but I do like the story. It is actually very well done. I mean, it's a 60s kind of plot. So, you know, everybody's after this one simple thing that could destroy the universe, but it's great. It's been a lot of fun listening to it again. So I definitely would recommend that.
Okay, cool. I just wanted to say about Dark's Master Plan. A few weeks ago, we did a motion comic of Mission to the Unknown from Rick Lundin's adaptation, which went down really well. We have a second installment. Unfortunately, we have a bit of a problem with hosting for it at the moment, because basically if we put it on YouTube, it's going to get pulled because it's got .2 titles on it. So at the moment, I don't know what we're going to do with it, but it may well end up being hosted on Casterbris. We'll sort that out later on. But just if anyone's interested, the first motion comic went down really well. So there you go. And we'll also be announcing something about a print version of Dalek's Master Plan, which will be for charity over the coming days. In fact, it might even be up before you listen to this podcast, dear listener. James, do you have any recommendations?
I did on request. I watched The Three Doctors yesterday.
We'll talk about that next week.
I know. I just wanted to point out that I watched it and you didn't, and I did my homework and you didn't.
I am sorry, dear listener.
It's all right.
I'm sorry.
Yes, and I'm listening, so you can actually pluralize the listener at that point. Yes, I'm good with that. No, funny enough, a bit like Brian last week, I sort of had a bit of a Doctor Who light week this week.
Yeah, me too, until last night, yeah.
I think sometimes, as you say, sometimes it's quite nice to have that and take a little break from it. So no, I don't think I have got any particular recommendations. The only recommendation I will make is just, again, based on the threads on the Casterbris website, it is Big Finish. There was a few dissenters of Big Finish on one of the recent review threads. Upcoming Big Finish teasers.
Yeah.
Which were a little negative, and I just wanted to sort of say, yeah, I still think we should be supporting them.
We will be.
I think one, as a Doctor Who fan, should support them. You don't have to buy it all. That's entirely up to you. But I think I still firmly believe that what they've done. I just kind of feel that, you know, if they didn't do what they'd done, there's so much art we'd have lost. I mean, as I've said before, the fact that we've got coming up, as reported this week, with the Lost Adventures, we've got, you know, more stuff with Maureen O'Brien, William Russell, you know, people have long gone from Doctor Who, which any other show, you'd never see those characters ever appear again with those voices.
Yeah.
And I think that alone is such a precious bit of art. That whether you like Big Finish or not, whether you feel it's gone downhill or not, that it's worth singing their praise, because you could perhaps argue that they perhaps released too much. I don't know. Maybe there's too much for people to ingest and enjoy. I don't know what you guys think, but I just think there's so much Doctor Who to do. It's no surprising. There's just so many eras, isn't there? So many things. I like the fact I've never listened to any of the countermeasure stuff, but I'm kind of glad they've done them. Because that is quite an interesting aspect of Doctor Who that, you know, as a fan, I'd think, I wonder what that was like after Remembrance of the Daleks. I wonder what they did. And there you go. I think that's cool. And it's not that anal, is it, really? It's not like the books, where you'll find so much of the books try to sew up the issues in the show. Like, for instance, I was reading about something. Think. Three Doctors. Did I mention that I watched that yesterday? Yeah, in The Three Doctors,
you did, yeah.
William Hartnell, there was one of the missing adventures actually tries to tie in when the First Doctor's taken out of his time period and suggests between the Time Meddler and Galaxy 4. And that's sort of thing that the books would tend to do, which Big Finish doesn't, really. I don't think Big, while it slots itself in because it has to find a place in their continuity, it doesn't make a big issue in trying to sort of tie up the loose ends of the show, which I think is kind of cool, because it'd be very easy to make your material like that, that you are just simply there to sort of tie in all the botched bits of continuity within the TV show. And it doesn't do that, really. It constantly tries to keep itself fresh, and I admire that, and I think it's worth recommending it for that.
Okay, I can go along with that. Yeah, okay. Well, I've got a couple of recommendations.
You do?
I do. First off, I would like to say that I want to recommend the Doctor Who figurine collection.
Oh, right, the one that we talked about last week.
Yes.
The one that you weren't here, yeah.
But at the moment, I can't.
Why is that, Christian Crawley?
Well, that is because, having received the first piece, I am dissatisfied with the paint quality.
Oh, dear. So it's not because you haven't got it, it's because you're not impressed with the actual quality.
Yes.
What
it's
what
also because I haven't received the subsequent pieces. This is the Matt Smith piece. This is the 11th Doctor.
This is the one that we questioned last week, me and Terra Nova, the genuine article.
Yes.
And that's interesting.
Yeah, so it's got very poor paint quality.
What's about the actual features? Because the features looked a bit...
Again, they're pretty much as illustrated. I don't think they're... the legs, they're fine. You know, the chest, arms, they're fine. The face... Another matter entirely.
Oh, dear.
So...
Okay, so aside from the paint alone, you know, which is where your big issue is lying, with this face sculpt as it is, you would still, if the paint was more up to your standards, recommend the line?
I think... based on what I've seen of the subsequent pieces, which aren't people, they are monsters, I would say yes. I mean... You know, you have the advantage of being able to cancel it at any time. So, you know, you're not stuck with it. If this is what the 9th Doctor the 11th Doctor figure looks like, then, you only have to open to the middle pages to see what the 11th Doctor actually looks like. And he doesn't look anything like this character here. So, as I say, I want to recommend it, but I'm not going to. I will maybe come back to this in... future.
I think that might be quite a nice idea, because as we said last week, some of them did look quite good. So if you get one that does look good, Christian, you will be here to actually
to
give the opposite side. So
indeed. And I'll maybe compare it with the 3.75 inch figure as well.
Oh, that's interesting. That could work in their favour.
Yes. Who knows? Two things I'm going to definitely recommend, and then I think we'll give something away.
Oh, right. Okay.
Okay. So first off, not Doctor Who. The last episode of the IT Crowd.
Oh, yes, I watched that.
Which I thought was marvellous, especially since I wasn't that keen on the third... was it third series or the fourth? The series prior to that.
I think it was fourth.
Was it fourth?
Yeah, I believe so.
I wasn't that keen on it. I didn't think it went together as a set of episodes as well as the previous
ones. The Countdown one was good, though.
The Countdown one was very good, but after that, I couldn't really find that much to laugh at. But I was very happy with the last episode.
I thought it was a good resolution, I must admit. Yeah. I wasn't sure... through the beginning of it that it was really capturing it. I think what was odd was it was normally the good IT Epic Crowd episodes are ones which Moss is particularly strong in, and I didn't think Moss was particularly strong in the finale, but it didn't matter, it was still enjoyable.
I could go along with that. Did you watch it yet, Brian?
I did. I was just gonna say it was an enjoyable episode, but it did one of the things that I really dislike when TV shows do, which was call attention to their own
situations,
memes, I guess. Situations.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Like, and it was like the way that they did it, you know, you can laugh at it a little bit, but at the same time, it was kind of like, yeah, we get it. That's what's funny about the show. We don't need you guys all of a sudden.
But I suppose
aware.
It was needed in a sense, because the whole premise was, is that without giving it away, well, if it is, you've got a stop button so you can stop us now. The premise is that the ending is meant to be quite a positive one. Well, normally they're negative. So in a sense, it's sort of trying to set up the fact that they can get away with doing a positive one on the basis that they're aware that the whole point of the show is that they don't. I know what you mean.
I can give you that. Yeah.
At the same time, I suppose it is very much... Strangely, the IT Crowd has been very subdued in the fact that Father Ted was often quite open to sort of pointing out its own silliness.
Yeah.
And IT Crowd's been a little less doing it. The only time I thought I wasn't sure I was going to like it is when they brought out the internet. And, right. You know, because that's the first time I'd seen them do an obvious callback. And it was, I was thinking, oh no, is this getting a bit, you know, fan wanky to call back to that? But it did sort of work.
It did work. I kind of thought, oh, why are they doing this? Don't do this. But it did work. So I kind of settled down after that, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, the bottom line is there was a possibility they weren't going to do it, wasn't it? I mean, he was feeling a bit drained of the whole thing. And I'm kind of glad that he came back and they did a nice send-off for the
I think
show.
I should probably be honest. The small racist moment and the running into the road and the being hit by a van with tits, I was choking because I just had a sip of ginger beer at that moment. And Kerry was sat in front of me, so it was a choice between choking and spluttering all over Kerry. So I went for
very wise, very wise.
I was extremely amused by it. My
only problem is that I'm so out of touch with popular television. I didn't twig what Secret Millionaire was until halfway through,
then
I remembered roughly what Secret Millionaire was
about.
It's quite
old now, actually. I don't think they do it anymore.
I don't know, but it's not something that really hit my radar. So there's a lot of that was lost in the first act on me. But
Okay. So IT Crowd, yay! Final episode there. So sad bye bye to the IT Crowd. We'll never see it again, other than on DVD box sets and 4OD and probably Dave. That's a cable channel in the UK.
If you're Dave's not
British.
Lucky.
Yeah. If Dave's lucky, yeah. And Terror of the Zygons came out today, Monday. You're possibly listening to this on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or next Monday. So it came out on the 30th of September. It's a single DVD, but there's a lot on there. So don't miss it. It's a very good... How long have we been waiting for it? Been waiting for it since 1996, essentially.
Seriously?
Yeah. So buy it.
Absolutely. Can I put one more recommendation? Because I was inspired by your lack of Doctor Who in your recommendation.
Okay.
Mine is slightly Doctor Who recommendation based. There is the sixth season of Doc Martin currently airing, which on Mondays on ITV. That's today for me, not for you, listener. Yours probably likely to be on another day of the week. But it's very good. Martin Clunes obviously was in Snake Dance, and I've always thought it would have been a very good Doctor. And I just... There's just something so...
Doctor.
He could be.
No, he
something so...
was the next Doctor.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yes, yeah. as in the next Doctor is in the episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's brilliant. And he is so cathartic for everyone who gets tired of people. His lack of ability to be socially mobile is...
And Ian McNeice is in it as well.
Yes.
Winston Churchill. Fans. Yes.
And of course, it did also have Kate, what's her name, who's in the IT Crowd.
Okay, Pattinson.
Yes.
But yes, it's just something lovely. I just love the way that he can just anyone's irritated, just stop talking. Do you get that? Good? Go away. It's just something so pleasurable about having that sort of thing. I suppose what I'm saying is there's a similarity in what you get out of the Doctor's cathartic ability to sort of totally ignore establishment and be anti-establishment. Doc Martin does that same sort of thing, but on a social level.
The etymology of that show, etymology is not the right word, but the background of that show fascinates me, and the character in particular.
What you mean is the history of the character?
The history of the character, yeah.
Yes, where he came from and...
Where he came from and then how they changed him and all the other things that they did. Yeah.
Yes, it's a long history that most people, including myself, until I went to Wikipedia one day, didn't realise.
Yeah, so he first appeared in Saving Grace. Which was a British movie at the time, but was overshadowed by Braveheart, I think I'm right in saying. Which starred, not Braveheart, Keegan. Saving Grace, starred Brenda Blethyn. And Martin Clunes was in it as well. And I'll tell you who else was in it as well. Your Craig Ferguson, the host of America's Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson, upon which Doctor Who people regularly attend when they're in California.
Because
that's yours,
Brian. Status as a huge Doctor Who fan, yeah.
Yeah. So, giveaway time. Hey, what are we doing? A giveaway on the podcast? What, have we gone mad?
I don't know. I don't know anything about this, so
it's not on my list. Yeah.
It's not on anyone's list because I kind of thought of it while we were talking earlier. And, you know, I get these pile of books from BBC Books. And I do like to read them, but I also like to give them away because it's nice to give things away. And what we've got here is... The Vault, which we talked about last week before last, I think. Marcus Hearn, has put together treasures from the first 50 years of Doctor Who. This includes the BBC Television Studios from Lime Grove Studio D, dated 25th of the 9th, presumably 1963, because it's got the TARDIS console and the ceiling bit as well. That's inside the binding. That's inside the front cover, that. And there's, you can see it again at the back of the book. In between, there's, we're knocking 330 pages of rare photos and props and lots of things. Nice picture of Rassilon smiling at me there from 2009. Going back, all the way back, covers of annuals and unused covers of annuals, prop diagrams, Sontaran spaceships. I'm looking at now from the Sontaran experiments. There's the brig in 1968. It's marvellous, and we're going to give it away. But we need to think of a question, I think. Do we need a question, guys? Okay, well, before
question,
we do a question...
The question is...
Go on, then.
Why is the vault not going to either me or Brian as being nice people? Why is it going to some riffraff out there? Well, what has the listener done to deserve this?
Yeah, what has the listener done to deserve the vault? And if you can tell us that in less than 100 words, email christian@casterbris.com and tell us, and you will be in for a treatity treat.
Very nice.
I'm afraid to see some of these answers, to be honest.
Yes, exactly. So and I just want to say, kind of think of this as, particularly if you're listening on audio brew, but also if you're listening on Casterbris, think of this as a thank you. Jaw-droppingly good listening figures on audio brew, as I shared with you guys last week. So I thought it'd be nice to kind of do something like this for our vast legion of listener, which is now approaching the kind of, dare I say it, 2,000 points.
Yeah, but technically, he is only one listener.
He is only one listener, yeah.
He can't so he's going to win regardless, isn't he?
Yes.
Or she, yeah. Maybe. Yeah, yes. Yeah. He or she, I think it's unlikely. Women don't watch Doctor Who. It's
yes,
a boys' thing.
Do.
No, they don't. Look.
13, James.
Oh, balls. I thought it was 1972.
No, sorry.
It's me not. And John Pertwee thought it was 1972, and we didn't think that women watch Doctor Who.
Sorry to disappoint you. So, that's a competition on the podcast. That's rare. Take advantage of it, Casterbrite. We'll send this book to you anywhere in the world. On Earth, not Antarctica or Neuschwabenland, though. That's a little reference. Look it up. So until next time, Casterbrite. James and Brian. Casterbrite. James and Brian would like to bid you farewell. And so would I. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Can't say my name like that at the end, James. That just doesn't work.
I don't know. Yeah, he could catch on. Be good at a police station.
Which is where you'll frequently find me.
I'm sure we will. Is that your police box there, sir? Because all your policemen, of course, have got British accents.
Yes, they do. Yeah.
You'll tell your name, sir.
Little known fact.
Yes, it's Mr.
It's too hard. I love that one.
Balls to the sketch. It was too hard.